In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Grant Newsham, United States Marine Corps retired, author of When China Attacks, Traveling, to comment on headline in the New York Times in these hours. Hegseth seeks to reassure allies on first official trip to Asia. At his first stop in the Philippines, goes the subhead, the U.S. Defense Secretary promised to strengthen deterrence against Chinese, in quote, threats in the region. He also plans to visit Japan. Therein lies the essay that Grant has posted. It anticipates that visit to Japan. Grant, a very good evening to you. We've talked often of what Japan needs and what Japan thinks about its position in the constellation of countries in Asia, either threatened by China or eager to contain China's aggression. Japan is the moment. And there's a new prime minister, and there are promises made over these last year or more during the Biden administration. So you have a to-do list for the secretary. What is important for him as he arrives in Japan? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. What I think is most important is to ensure that this is not just another meeting where both sides say the relationship is rock solid, bound by shared mutual values, and never been stronger. And that's generally how these things go, and it's sort of a love fest. But the secretary needs to go with some specific requests of the Japanese for what we need them to do, particularly so that they can fight alongside us. And that's what I was getting at in the piece. And presumably, Secretary Hegseth's staff has given him a list of things he should ask for. I suggested a couple things in my paper. I've been pushing these for a long time. But that's the important thing, is to come back from Japan saying, look, I did this, this, and this that is going to make our warfighting capabilities better, both for the U.S. and Japan and for Japan themselves. And it is good to have a secretary actually talking about fighting and actually stating clearly what the threat is, which is the PRC.
In your piece, you quote an unnamed Japanese observer saying that this is a race against time. What does that mean, and does the secretary know it?
I don't know that he knows it. His staff should have told him, assuming they figured it out. What the fellow meant is that Ishiba, the prime minister, is not going to be around all that long. But Ishiba, for all his problems, has managed to allow to be put together in the defense side of the Japanese government some very good people. There's a good lineup, and they are just waiting for the Americans to ask them to do things, to tell Japan what the Americans want. And if they do that, then I think America might be surprised that the Japanese actually deliver. But if Ishiba's only going to be around for, say, a few more months, possibly, then if he leaves, those people go as well, and the window closes. It's kind of a double meaning here, and one is a sort of a window of opportunity in Japan, but also there isn't a whole lot of time before the Chinese really come hard.
Specifically, you've guided me to understand the Okinawa chain is the most profound part of the defensive perimeter for the first island chain, and you recommend a joint task force. To do what? What's the mission, Grant?
Well, you want the Americans and the Japanese, their forces, down there operating together, patrolling, exercising, and demonstrating that the defense of Japan is a joint U.S.-Japan effort. It's not just Japan. And the Chinese know that they could take on the Japanese if it's just one-on-one. But you throw us into the equation, and it's very different. And finally, we have got to start making the defense of southern Japan in particular— those islands that go all the way down to Taiwan, make it clear that this is the Americans and the Japanese doing it. Towards that end, you really need to have a joint task force with a headquarters in Okinawa that has that mission. It has the personnel assigned to it from both sides. It has forces allocated to it from both sides. It needs to get out and about. And there's always a political, psychological aspect to this. And believe me, if the Japanese see that it's the Americans and the Japanese operating together, they're going to take notice and they are going to be on the back foot. Amazingly enough, there has never been a permanent sort of joint U.S.-Japan force in the entire 60-plus years of the defense treaty. This is at least 20 years overdue, but better late than never. If they can do it, then there'll be lots of people saying why it's impossible, too hard politically, but really it's only as hard as you want it to be.
Before China revealed its predations, there was a defense policy review initiative agreed upon, and it involved a number of details, but the one that strikes me is, what was going to happen, war start? We bug out? Is that the idea?
The idea was we were going to bug out before the war started. What it was is an agreement reached after just years of very difficult negotiations with the Japanese to move American forces, particularly the Marines, to move some large number of them from Okinawa to Guam. The idea was that, well, the Americans are such an irritant that if we don't move them out of Japan, then it could destroy the entire relationship because the Japanese public will be so outraged. But think about this. This is ridiculous. The Japanese don't want to live with us, but they expect us to come and die for us on demand. Well, that's not a vote getter in Washington. There was always a huge, huge overestimation of the sensitivity of U.S. forces in Japan and on Okinawa in particular. It was very poorly handled by the U.S. government. The Japanese didn't cooperate much either. They negotiated as if we were the problem, not the Chinese. And at that time, nobody even saw the Chinese as a threat, except a few of us. But you couldn't say that. So the idea was move the Americans. This irritant is removed, and it's going to be happy, you know, happy living ever after. I would note that when the Marines decided where to move troops to, I'm told that this was reliably told that this was done one afternoon at headquarters Marine Corps by two generals who knew nothing about Asia but had a magic marker and some white paper, and they just moved forces where they thought they ought to go without any real thought. And there were junior officers nearby who, as junior officers do, they recognize sort of idiocy when they see it. So I'm told they actually saved the white paper and put it in a safe to sort of preserve the evidence. But what it means now is we've got to relook at this. And it'd be nice if Secretary Hegseth said, look, this agreement was made back when nobody thought China was a problem. If we carry it out, this is going to be dangerous. And we need to sort of have another look. And I'm told on the Japanese side, they are very willing to do this if the Americans will make the first move.
Will the Japanese say what they need? Will they be blunt?
I hope they do. And I've suggested in my piece that this tough straight talk works both ways. And the Japanese, it would be nice if they said, look, this is what we need from you. And don't back off. Will they do that? I kind of doubt it. It would be out of form, but you never know. But they really ought to feel like they should. And I mentioned in the piece as well that in 1970, when the Americans wanted to put an aircraft carrier into Yokosuka, the Americans were dithering and explaining to themselves why it was all just too hard, too sensitive for the Japanese to allow this. And they weren't asking. And the prime minister's office actually passed word to the Americans and said, tell us what you need and don't back down.
Okay.
And we never do that. We just, best advice we've ever gotten, we refuse to follow it. But maybe this administration will go with a list and tell the Japanese what they need.
Grant Newsham, I'm John Bash.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.